Well, hey everybody, Mike Griffith here. Welcome to tonight's Ingles on the Beat show, and a lot to talk about. A lot of good news for Georgia athletics. Certainly some interesting news breaking over the weekend. But I want to start with this thought, and I keep banging this drum because I can't repeat it enough. This is just to me one of the most fascinating things when I think about Kirby Smart and Georgia football, and I think about the success that they've had, and I think about perception of programs and what it really means, right? So when I think about the Vince Dooley era, and I think about the great teams with Herschel Walker and the 1980 national championship, I was amazed to go back and learn that Dooley never had a preseason top five team. Now, that was pretty fascinating. You'd think, oh my gosh, everybody knew Georgia was great, but they didn't get the same respect that they get now. And you look at Kirby, and every year, it's top five. Now, most people think Georgia's going to be a preseason number one this year. That's what a lot of the early polls suggest, the way too early polls. Certainly, they'll be top five, right? So it'd be 20, 24, 23, 22, 21, 20, 19, 18. Were they preseason top five in 17? I'm not sure. But at least seven straight years for Kirby Smart. This is his ninth year. And Dooley never had 1 year preseason top five. So I think it's safe to say that the perception of Georgia football has never been higher, never been greater. Certainly the back-to-back national titles that Georgia won in 2021 and 2022. Nobody else did that in the college football playoff era. There were other years and poll years people did it. In BCS years, people did it. But when you had to win two playoff games in addition, you know, to playing in your conference title game, no one did it in those back-to-back college football playoff era years. And that's pretty remarkable. Then you also think about Georgia's 29-game win streak, the longest in SEC history, in an era where there were back-to-back national championship college football playoff years. I mean, that's like three postseason games. Before, there used to be one. There was a bowl game. And so when I look at, like, what is the greatest Georgia accomplishment, the 29-game win streak was pretty fascinating when you think that's the longest in SEC history. And then you think the back-to-back in the playoff era, you wonder if you'll see that again, especially now that we're going to 12 teams. It's almost like the four-game playoff is its own era from 2013 through 2023. Pretty remarkable era for Georgia football and certainly Georgia's accomplishments at the top of everyone's. So here's the thing that I stumbled upon that I thought was so interesting. Kirby Smart has not lost a game in the last 5 years to any current coaches. That's a nice way of saying that Nick Saban was the only one that could beat him, right? Nick Saban beat him in there. I think Ed Orgeron beat him in 2019 in this last five-year stretch. Dan Mullen, of course, Orgeron and Mullen on the sidelines. Saban was the other coach that did it. You go back to 2018, and Tom Herman beat him at Texas. That's still coaching in 2018. Saban also beat Kirby in 2018, as did Orgeron. So Tom Herman, 2017, Georgia lost two games, Saban and Gus Malzahn, who's now at Central Florida, right? You go all the way back to 2016, and Kirby's first year was not special, very inauspicious start. And you've got Derek Mason, who was at Vanderbilt then, now at MTSU. You've got Butch Jones, who was then at Tennessee, now at Arkansas State. You got Hugh Freeze, who was then at Ole Miss, now at Auburn. And Jim McElwain, who was then at Florida, now at Central Michigan. So the reason I bring all this up and these impressive streaks and the fact that there's no active coaches that have beaten Kirby Smart head-to-head in the last 5 years is that Kirby hasn't been the national coach of the year. I keep bringing it up because I think it's ridiculous. And this thing that he's supposed to win, I mean, how do you dominate college football and win like Kirby's won and not win national coach of the year honors? I mean, to me, it's ridiculous. It's a perception game. It's a media darling thing. It's this, to me, this ridiculous logic or rationale that, oh, it has to be somebody who's not at a school that's supposed to win, like Eli Drinkwitz. Like, oh, well, they weren't supposed to be good and they won, so he's the best coach of the year. Isn't that what coach of the year is? best coach of the year. And yet Kirby had a 29-game win streak, longest in SEC history, covered three seasons, and wasn't national coach of the year any of those years. And won two national titles and wasn't national coach of the year any of those years. And back-to-back national titles. The whole thing is just ridiculous, all right? It is. And it shows you the favoritism that takes place. And it shows you how different media create narratives that's convenient to them, who they talk to. It's kind of like when I look at recruiting book. This is the recruiter of the year. Just say the biggest leak of the year. Don't say he was the best recruiter, okay? Because money was involved, probably. And the people that voted vote for the guys that give them news and leak information. And it's kind of like that now with Coach of the Year. I'm over it. And I get upset about it because as someone in journalism, I'm careful now. I've got my opinions, right? But when I write a story and I report a story, it's important to get the score right. It's important to name the leading scorer. It's important to paint the picture as it really was. And when we get into this whole revisionist history thing, I mean, 20 years from now, someone's going to look back at last season in the SEC, and they're going to think Eli Drinkwitz was the best coach in the league. Well, he was the coach of the year. He was not the best coach in the league, right? So you've almost got to put an asterisk next to these things. It's like game MVPs. Hell, he was selected game by who? The TV people holding the microphone? I've been at games, literally, where they've handed out ballots for MVP of a playoff game, and they never collected them. And there was a playoff that wasn't voted on. Play MVP by who, right? Everybody wants the narrative, and it's dangerous. It's dangerous when people sell you an inaccurate narrative, because then down the line, you find out all those things you thought weren't true, and it's the media's fault. Well, it's not everybody in the media. There's certain parts of the media that seem to carry a little more weight than others, right? And have a little more power. A lot of these rights holders carry a lot of power, right? ESPN carries a lot of power. It's just kind of a thought that I had. And I wanted to start with that because the whole revisionist history thing really rubs me the wrong way. Someday people are going to look back at the back-to-back Georgia national championships. And I hope they realize who the best players were. I hope they recognize. Like, to me, the first statue that I'm putting up is number 19, Brock Bowers. Because he was unbelievable. Because he was the game changer. Because he was the catalyst. Because he was the starting point for every defensive coach. How do we stop number 19? He was the go-to guy on third down. He was the home run hitter. He was the most consistent player of that three-year dynasty, of that 29-game win streak, was Brock Bowers. And I think that needs to be noted. To me, if I'm capturing that area, someone that covered the team, the guy that you couldn't have done without what on offense was number 19, more than any other player. Defensively, it was number 99. Because if number 99 doesn't come back, you don't win in 2021. And he was the leader in the clubhouse, and that is Jordan Davis. And those are my two statues automatically right out of the gate. Because without those two guys, I think if you took either one of them out, you wouldn't have won a title. There was a lot of other guys that were replaceable. There was somebody else that could have stepped in, but nobody could have replaced Jordan Davis and what he brought in the clubhouse and at practice and as a run stopper and coming back for a senior season. And nobody is going to replace number 19. You're not going to see another tight end like this. What he did as a freshman, as a sophomore, as a junior was just, Georgia was unbeatable with this guy healthy. Right. I fully believe, and I know Alabama people are going, well, we've heard this before. If Brock Bowers is healthy, I don't think Georgia loses a game last year. Just don't. So throw that out there, just right out of the gate. I want to talk about the SEC schedule. This came out last week. It kind of triggered me because I'm like, why in the world is this coming out in the middle of March? Like, what are we doing here? Like, there's not like this. Why isn't there like a countdown show or a special presentation, or why isn't this talked about at spring meetings when we can ask these presidents and ADs, like, how did you come up with this? The fact that they're repeating the league schedule flies in the face of all the logic and rationale we've been told was happening when they were looking at different schedule models. The whole concept was, oh, well, you know, you want these kids to play all these different schools, and the most fair thing to do is to rotate opponents so everybody plays all the different teams, and over the stretch of a four-year career, a player can play all the schools in the league. And you're going, yeah, that's, that makes sense. Okay, that's good. And it's like, well, which one rival do you want to keep, and yada, yada, yada. And then this year, they're like, oh, but for now, we're just going to flip the schedule. We're just going to say you're going to play the same team 2 years in a row, just like you've been doing previously when there was divisional play. In fact, usually there was like one team that rotated. Now there's none. Is this good for Georgia? I think it's exciting for Georgia's home schedule. But does it help Georgia's championship odds and hopes? I don't think so. I don't think so. Now, talking to people over at Georgia, and I know how Kirby thinks, and, you know, he's not one to complain after the fact, but the mentality is, well, who knows how good any of these teams will be in 2025. What we know is that in 2024, Georgia plays five teams that are in ESPN's FPI top 16, Clemson being 16, right? Four other SEC teams, Ole Miss, Alabama, Texas, Tennessee. I mean, that's tough. So this season alone, Georgia fans know that the Bulldogs travel to play at Alabama. They travel to play at Texas. They travel to play at Ole Miss. They play Clemson in Atlanta in the opener. Trevor Etienne, reports broke Sunday morning that the Georgia running back transferred from Florida had been arrested on reckless driving and DUI charge. Not sure how that case turns out. Right. Georgia's basically issued a press release saying we're aware of this. We'll get all the details. Kirby Smart will talk about this. I'm sure he'll say it'll be handled internally. They'll refer to, you know, whatever policies. And yet it's on a case by case basis. The details matter, how it washes out. Listen, I don't know if Trevor Etienne will play in the opening game. That's where a lot of people's minds go. That's not where my mind goes. My mind goes to, look, this is a young talent who is on the verge of a pivotal year. This is a contract year. If things go the way they should go, Trevor Etienne will play 1 year at Georgia and be drafted in the first two rounds of the NFL draft. That's not a given. No one's told me that he's going to go pro after 1 year, but he'll be eligible to go pro. And to me, this is a guy that's going to get over 1,000 yards. If he stays healthy, if he checks all the boxes in practice, which he had been doing, which is why this is surprising and disappointing, you know, that he would get pulled over driving recklessly, according to the police report. We'll see how that pans out. To me, you know, I don't think you want to punish a team as much as you want to hold an individual accountable. Could that mean he doesn't play in the public spring game and have that chance to showcase his ability in front of his family and friends in the spring game? Does it mean Clemson? Does it mean any game? Will there be any, you know, I don't know the answers to those questions, but I'd like to think we're past the point of just, you know, punish to punish, right? The whole objective is to teach a lesson. And I don't know that making Etienne miss the Clemson game any more than missing the Kentucky game or the G-Day game. I don't know. You know, my coworker, Jeff Centel, had a good idea though, or a thought. And he shared it with me. I don't think he would mind me sharing it with you because we were just having this discussion. And he said, what if these NIL deals came with like a morality clause? What if like part of the deal when you get paid at a school, which most guys are getting paid, I'm sure ETN has some sort of package. What if part of the payment is dependent upon you not violating that clause? In other words, if you got a DUI or if you got arrested or if you broke X whatever test or team rule, that you would lose that money. Would that change the behavior? That's one way that the NIL money or the collective money could actually be of help if you made it conditional on following rules. And I thought that was a good thought from Jeff. Of course, you guys know Jeff does his show on Wednesday nights, and I'll let him advance the discussion. But I thought that was an interesting discussion. I thought about that with ETN. Want to move forward? We're going to have Wes Johnson. Should have mentioned that earlier in the program. We're going to have Georgia baseball coach Wes Johnson, coach of the number 24 ranked Georgia Bulldogs. How about that? The Bulldogs with a big sweep over Alabama at home last weekend. We're going to talk to Coach Johnson about that. I mean, this is a team that got swept at Kentucky, and a lot of people went, aha, they really aren't that good. You know, they won 16 of their first 17. They were playing a bunch of no-name schools, although they had a couple wins over Georgia Tech. And they're just not good enough to win the SEC. They go to Kentucky, get swept. They come back and sweep number 8-ranked Alabama at home. It was impressive. And you're going to be impressed by Wes Johnson. Wes is a former, Major League Baseball assistant coach. Of course, he was at LSU. He's been at Mississippi State. But I can understand why Josh Brooks hired Wes Johnson. And I think you're really going to enjoy that interview. We're going to have Wes in just a few minutes join us. Saw there were some decommitments to USC and or flips or whatever. Listen, I've never been big on the whole, recruiting commitment thing because I know how things can change. I've seen it. I guess one of the biggest flips I've ever seen was Cade Mays. I was covering Tennessee, and Cade was a local guy, and he was the hope and the future of the program at Tennessee at that time. He was one of the banner recruits. He was there when they'd have their orange carpet visits, and he would be the guy everybody would talk to, and he was recruiting everybody else to Tennessee. And then when Butch Jones's tenure, it became clear that it was not going to be extended, Cade was gone. And all of a sudden that commitment meant nothing. And you say, wow, that's a 17-year-old kid. You know, it's almost as if people take that commitment as contract. It's not. And now more than ever, it's only part of the negotiation, right? So a guy flips to Southern Cal. That doesn't mean he's going to sign there. What it probably means, speculating here, probably got paid. Hey, look, we'll pay you $10,000, whatever, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 to flip your commitment from Georgia. Because what does it do? It creates a perception. And as we talked about at the start of the program, perception can overtake reality. And, oh, wow, look at USC. They really got it going. Do they really got it going on? Or do they just pay a couple guys to flip? Will the guy actually go through with it and sign? Or does this mean now Georgia's got to come back with a bigger bag of money? Right? It's just a bidding war. And so the whole commitment thing to me, and I'm not saying this is true of all young men, but there's enough of them out there that when a guy commits, you go, okay, part of the recruiting process. If he signed, oh, so-and-so signing, maybe that's what they need to do. Have a guy sign and sign early. And once he signed, he signed. And if he gives up his signing, then he's got to give some money back. Something. I mean, you just can't have things be as random as they seem right now. But this is kind of where we're at with this whole commitment, signing, and NIL, and collective money, and contract. And, I think Kirby Smart manages this as well as anybody, but it's still tough. And the concept that a kid who hasn't played it down yet is going to make more money potentially than a guy that's already on the roster as a junior who's working his way up, right? Over time, it'll work out, but there's still going to be a few veterans that are like, hey, I'm a senior, man. Where's my money? I never got paid to, right out of high school or paid that much. I think that managing the locker room is really important, one of the more important aspects of college football. And I think that's where Kirby Smart's skills, as what I call him, the king of roster management, are so important. And that's why I think it was so important for Kirby to kind of, put Carson Beck's Lamborghini into, making jokes about it, making light of it. You hear Tate Ratledge making jokes at Carson's expense about being money bags and money. I'm sure Carson takes a lot of teasing over the car. And all that does is kind of equal out the locker room so people can bear it like, oh, yeah, okay. That's our quarterback. That's our big money quarterback. And most quarterbacks are big money quarterbacks these days. That's part of it, right? It's the most valuable position on the team. And typically it's hard to keep a guy like Carson around, for his fourth year if he hasn't played the first three. But Carson Beck stuck it out. The hopes are going to be on him and Trevor Etienne as well. The ETN is a pivotal player. I mean, I can't tell you what a big deal this guy is. And when you look at what Georgia's going to have to do next year with all the newness in the receiving core, Trevor Etienne is to me, the most valuable skill position player on this team. And what happens is going to be important. not just what happens with whether he gets suspended again. I'm talking about for him, the growth, the lesson learned. How does Trevor Etienne handle the adversity, right? How does Georgia handle Trevor Etienne's adversity? How does Carson Beck lead from here? How does Tate Ratledge lead from here? It's a test for the team when things go awry. I want to take a short break. I want to recognize our sponsor, Ingles. Before we go to Wes Johnson, the baseball coach, I want to thank Ingles for their support. They've been with us from the start. One for Ingles. Couldn't shoot straight like this. Ingles shoots you straight. Ingles delivers. Let's recognize our sponsor, Ingles. We come back. Georgia baseball coach, Wes Johnson.
Did you know that Ingles sells more organics than any other store? Or that they run their own dairy? Or that they only serve USDA Choice and Prime meat? Did you know that they have more local craft beer than any place else? Or that they have Energy Smart stores? Or that they professionally slice and package imported cheese from Europe? Did you know about their giant international aisle, local farm partnerships, curbside pickup, wine department? Or that they donate 3,956 meals a day to local food banks? Well, now you do. It's all in the bag. Ingles, low prices, love the savings.
Well, as promised, Georgia baseball coach Wes Johnson joins us. And coach, if somebody would have told you that you'd be 21-4 with the number 8 RPI in the nation coming off a sweep over a top 10 Alabama team at this stage of the season, is Georgia where you would want it to be, is where it needs to be this early in the year?
Yeah. Obviously, we were off to a good start. I mean, you know, guys are, you know, having fun and playing well. Is it where you need to be? I don't know that you're ever where you need to be, right? I mean, there should always be a bar. You know, the bar only moves one way, and it's consistently going up. And so, yeah, but I mean, are we happy with where we are right now? Yes, but we better never be settled. And, you know, this league is tough. I mean, you know, we got a top five opponent we're going to this weekend. And I mean, I go on and on. Everybody knows the league, knows how good it is.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, what's amazing to me is, you know, you're talking about a team with 28 new players between the transfers, the freshmen, and yet there really seems to be a chemistry. And it was put to the test early. Georgia going on the road, getting swept with what turns out to be a pretty good Kentucky team. They're 5-1. That's a pretty good ball club. And you respond coming home and sweeping Alabama. And I guess I would just ask you about that chemistry and what the guys have been able to get done in the fall ball and now early in the year. The way they responded, coach, really tells me there's something special going on in that dugout.
Yeah, no, the guys believe in each other and believe in themselves. And, you know, you wish these guys were robots, I guess, so to speak. But, you know, we had a bad weekend in Kentucky. There's no getting around it. We didn't, I say a bad weekend. We just didn't play to our standards. And then, you know, you're on the road. You're not going to get any breaks. You need to be ready for that. You're not going to get any, you know, very seldom does the ball bounce the way it should, right, when you're on the road. And, you know, we didn't handle that very well. But, you know, it's something that we were able to reflect back on some games we had played earlier in the year, some things we had done in the fall. And then, you know, get back to work against a really good Wofford team last Tuesday. And it, you know, I had a lot of people asking me about the weekend and coming up with Bama. And I just, you know, our focus has to be today, no matter where we're at or what we're doing. Just with our team today, I mean, we've got a good Mercer team coming in tomorrow. We practice today. We have to be ready to win today and then go out and play a really good Mercer team tomorrow. We can't, you know, start looking at Tennessee or anything else. When you do that, you don't get better typically. You know, you may take a step forward, but you're almost guaranteeing you're going to take two or three steps backwards. So just focusing on today was the big message, you know, coming out of that Kentucky weekend.
Yeah. Guess I'll throw out the elephant in the room. We know this team can hit. An amazing start, and we'll talk about Charlie and Corey and Paul in just a moment. It looks like the Georgia pitching rotation, and this is where your expertise, your metrics, your background, it looks like this is something that is a work in progress. And I think it's probably true of all SEC pitching staffs these days, but how do you work it? And who are some of the guys that are starting to emerge that you're pleased with as this team goes into the third week of the SEC season?
Yeah, you know, we knew that, you know, when the fall started, right? I mean, we knew that, you know, if the pitching was going to need the, you know, everybody needs work, but, you know, was going to need the, to improve a ton for us to be, you know, competitive in this league. And we're still a work in progress. But you know, you start to see some things that from some players, is some things are starting to, you know, happen. Doesn't guarantee you're going to get wins or losses or success, but you're excited because they're getting better. You know, you look at a Leighton Finley, who's never started before, had never thrown five innings in SEC play till this year. And, you know, so he's making some adjustments. We still got a long way to go with Leighton, but, you know, at least the mentality side of it, he's been out there now two weekends in a row. And, you know, you look at a Christian Maracna, who's learning on the fly. We didn't get Christian till January. And he's learning on the fly and learning how, you know, this league is and just how being a starter is. Another guy who hadn't started. And then, you know, you've got a guy in Charlie Goldstein who's been in this league and, you know, hasn't been in that Friday night role, so to speak, but is now in that role and is learning how to not only compete on Friday nights, but prepare. Because, you know, the league is very, very offensive this year, extremely offensive. But then you look at, you know, we've got a couple guys that I really like, you know, coming out of the pen right now. Brian Zeldin has made a phenomenal jump without getting into everything there. And Colton Smith has made, you know, a really nice jump. And, you know, then you're going to start to see some guys pitch more that, you know, are doing some things like you look at a Josh Roberge. I mean, you know, the thing with a lot of these guys, when you look at like a Josh Roberge, or even yesterday we had a DJ Radke throw, and, you know, you'll see some Zach Harris and some of our other players. What the biggest thing that you're starting to see is these guys are understanding their role and being able to come in and get outs. You know, Zach DeVito's throwing the ball really well right now, and we've made some changes to him and got his velocity back up. And so excited to continue to see where these guys go.
We're talking to Georgia baseball coach Wes Johnson. Wes has the Bulldogs off to a 21-4 start. They have a top 10 RPI. I don't know what the polls are going to say as we tape this. That polls don't really matter a whole lot right now. What matters, as Wes has talked about, is the development of these young men. And, you know, one guy that we can't talk enough about, and I know, Coach, you've talked a lot about Charlie Connan. Even when you were the LSU pitching coach, you were talking about Charlie Connan. But here's Charlie leading the nation with a .513 batting average, 14 home runs. Kentucky liked him so much they walked him five times and hit him with two pitches. Maybe that was the smart thing. He was 6-for-11 with five RBIs and three home runs against Alabama. It just doesn't look like there's a good way to pitch this guy, Wes. You've been around a long time. What would you tell folks that haven't seen Charlie play about this young man?
Well, he's the best player in the country. I'm not saying that just because he's on our team. I think you, as you alluded to right there, you can go through a lot of objective data or measurements, and they're all going to back it up. I mean, I think the other thing that you'll see, you know, from Charlie is not only is he phenomenal in the, you know, in the batter's box, but what he's doing defensively for us right now, I think is getting, you know, overlooked. This guy has played a really good third base for us. He played center field two of the games this weekend because we had Dylan Carter got hit with a pitch in the hand. He's played left. He's played right. He's played first. So he's doing it. And the thing that I think, you know, goes unlooked on that is it gives us something called lineup flexibility, which allows us to get some people into the lineup to potentially get him to the plate more where they're going to have to pitch to him. And so, you know, when you really put all that into consideration, I mean, he's a very special player. And, you know, I've told people this a lot. I mean, whether you're just a casual baseball fan, or you're a diehard, if you're just that casual baseball fan, you need to get out to Foley Field just to see Charlie Condon for one game, just so you can look back and go, wow, I saw Charlie Condon play, you know, in college, because that's how special this young man is.
I've said he's the Herschel Walker of Georgia baseball. He is amazing. He is absolutely phenomenal. Stole two bases yesterday. Anything the guy can't do. You know, Coach, you, again, you're known for your metrics. You're known, you know, your Major League Baseball background, a scientific approach, you had an old school approach with managing players in a positive attitude that Josh Brooks just loved. And it's all talk until you see it in action. You made the move to make Corey Collins a leadoff hitter. And we're all kind of going, oh, wait a minute. But you look at the results. He's 11 of 17 at the plate against Alabama. 6 home runs, 13 RBIs in this leadoff slot. And you say it's plate discipline. I want you to explain it because you explained it yesterday. And even as I'm writing and I'm trying to put it into it in layman's terms, I'm like, I just can't say it like Coach Johnson. But something about the discipline and how teams have to pitch them. And this move really paid off big.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we look at a ton is you know, you think about it. Charlie Connors hitting in the two hole. You don't need a guy in front of him to steal bases, because if he steals second, then they're just going to walk Charlie. They've got the open base. You need a guy to get on base, and then also a guy who does not chase or swing out of the strike zone a lot. Corey, besides Charlie, Corey is our best at not chasing statistically. And so he doesn't swing a ton at balls out of the strike zone. So when that happens, guys typically get more fastballs. Then you look at who's, you know, a good fastball hitter, and that's obviously Corey. And so those were all the factors when you look at plate discipline and then what can he hit. Just because he doesn't swing at balls, can he still hit a good fastball? And Corey fits that mold. Corey's getting on base. Well, you know, I joked the other day. I said, Corey, man, you know, we put you up there to get on base. Now you're hitting homers. So that base is still open for Charlie, but keep hitting homers. And so long story short, those were a lot of the factors that went into, you know, moving Corey into the leadoff spot.
That was a brilliant move, and a guy that had been in the program. A couple transfers, Paul Tetz and Slade Alford, and Paul, a guy from Purdue. You found him. This is a guy you knew you wanted early. It amazes me because these guys are all in the portal, and yet you've got to have enough of a relationship and enough of a scouting report to know who's going to fit into your system and what their role might be. And it looks like these guys are really – filling out nice. And I mentioned him and Slate because they're next in the leading hitters at 396 and 345, although you've explained to me that there's a lot more to being a good hitter than just average. But if you could talk a little bit about Paul and Slate and what they're bringing. I mean, obviously, we can't go down the entire lineup. We don't have time to do that on the show. But these are a couple other guys that really caught my eye this weekend.
Yeah, you know, when we started looking at the transfer portal, we wanted guys who, as we – call are multi-positional, because it does give you so much lineup flexibility. And even though Paul's played a lot of outfield, Paul's really good at second and third if we were ever to put him in there. Well, he played second on game two on Saturday. And so, you know, we knew Paul could hit. We knew he could move the baseball. He's older. He's got a really good approach. We know, you know, obviously we know what Paul – you know, what guys he has trouble with. And because we do have some lineup flexibility, we've been able to maybe set Paul a game, you know, when there's been that tough right-hander with a really good slider. And we've been able to play, you know, a more left-handed lineup in those days. But Paul's old. Paul is probably one of the smarter baseball guys on our team. I mean, the guy just really studies the game and understands the game. And, you know, you get a lot of the same thing with Slade Alford. I think people thought when we got Slade, oh, well, he's just third baseman. You know, he's played a lot of second, played third this weekend. Yeah, you haven't seen him play first at a game, but he's really good at first. You'll probably see him play first at some point before this season's up, or he could be even this weekend. You know, so he still takes his reps at first. Yeah, he's just a veteran hitter in our league. You know, I mean, you look, you know, here's some crazy stuff I look at when, you know, you talk about things with – Slate is our best hitter at fouling off two strike pitches. So I look a lot of two strike foul balls. How does that affect players, and what does it do to the opposing pitcher's pitch count? And Slate does a phenomenal job with that, which, you know, drives pitch count. So, you know, even though you look at Slate and you go, okay, yeah, he's hitting 340 whatever right now. And, but at the end of the day, he sees the most pitches of anybody we have, which, as you guys know, really can affect the bullpen and do some other things.
Yeah, it's so exciting, Coach, to hear you talk about this team. And again, it's very young in the season. You stressed yesterday the importance that this team has to stay hungry. They already got a dose of humility. And yet, talking to the players, talking to Paul, and he talks about the roles. It's interesting. You were explaining the situational, when he hits and when you might change things up. They get it. They're bought in. These guys like each other. You just don't often see this sort of chemistry this early in the season with this amount of transfers. You know, you would think the portal would make it a me game, but that's just not the sort of guys that you've recruited, and certainly not the sort of players that'll produce at a competitive level in the SEC. And I know that you are zoomed in on Mercer, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask, because Knoxville is an incredibly difficult place to play. And I've seen it as a Tennessee beat writer. I've seen it as the opposing beat writer. And that's going to be a different sort of test than Kentucky, I would think.
No, 100% it is. It's they're extremely offensive. They have three really good starters. You know, there's a reason they're in the top five in the country, right? They're that good. And you know, we're a good team. So, you know, I think the biggest thing is understanding that, you know, it's something I talk to our guys about. You be careful on the road not to play with lose your energy and play too emotional. Because if we get too emotional, then we lose focus. And there's such a fine line with that. And you'll see that in the environment we're going to. You'll see some teams come in and you know, we're going to work all week after Tuesday to address that and to not try, you know, we'll go through some different things that we do to not get too emotional, no matter what happens. You know, they're going to hit a homer. We're going to hit a homer. And how do we balance that and stay focused? And yes, we want to take the energy from those things, but we don't want, when it goes on the other side, we don't want to become too emotional, because then we'll lose focus. And that's going to be our challenge this weekend.
Final question for you, Coach. You've had a long and very successful career. First head coaching opportunity you've chosen to get into. Why was this the right job for you to step into this role? One, and two, part of your background is from Major League Baseball. What did you bring from the majors, do you think, back into the collegiate level?
Yeah, I'll answer that, the first part. You know, I think the biggest, you know, you never know what you're walking into. You've always known that Georgia high school baseball is some of the best in all of the country. So you felt like recruiting was good. But then, you know, for me, when I got in here and I talked to Josh Brooks and I saw his passion and I saw, you know, the support, I just saw everything. For me, it was a slam dunk at that point. You know, I think his vision and what he's trying to build here and build and continue to get, you know, not just baseball, football, basketball, but it's all 21 sport. I mean, he's passionate about this place and he wants everybody to be successful. And he goes and works to no end to make that happen. That was a big sell for me, because you can't come into this league and not have that and expect to be successful or even have a shot at being successful. So that was, you know, obviously the university was a draw, but then when I got with him, it was like, okay, this is a slam dunk. You know, on the other side, I think the biggest thing that I've brought back with me from Major League Baseball is just game management. You know, in the major leagues, you have to stay so far ahead of the game because you can be up 3-0 and 3 pitches later, it's a tie ball game. And so I think just being able to think ahead of the game and making the moves that I had to be a part of on the defensive side of the baseball has really, really helped me.
Well, Coach, I can tell your players are bought in. A lot of energy and momentum for the Bulldogs coming off a sweep over Alabama at home, and we'll look to the polls. We'll see if the Dogs get ranked right now, number 8 in the RPI rankings in the country. So it's an impressive start. But as you said, I know you're going to keep those guys hungry and positive. So we're really going to look forward to the game with Mercer at Foley. And then should be a pretty interesting trip to Knoxville. I really appreciate you joining us, Coach.
Thanks, and y'all have a great day, and go Dogs.
Anytime Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing. Our family has been making sure Georgia fans and their families are comfortable for over 20 years. Let us do the same for yours. Anytime. Service, repairs, and replacement with trained systems. Our trained comfort specialists are carefully selected to visit your home and offer you a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Anytime offers an annual 3-visit comfort plan starting at just $155. Visit AnytimeHVAC.com for details. Anytime. Large enough to take care of your heating, cooling, and plumbing, but small enough to care.
Well, welcome back to the program, and it was great to have Coach Johnson on. We had a chance to visit with him earlier today. Wes, obviously, getting some film on Mercer, getting ready for that game Tuesday night. Wanted to mention the Georgia baseball team ranked, we mentioned it a little bit earlier, number 24 by Baseball America and USA Today. Look, this is relevant to be ranked. This is street cred for Georgia baseball and momentum. And they're going to play at Tennessee this weekend. They got Mercer Tuesday at home. Then they're going to play at number 5 Tennessee in Knoxville. Very hostile environment. Very hostile environment. Now, Georgia was able to get a win up there. The last time they played in Knoxville, Dog Nation was up there covering that. We'll see what happens this weekend when they play the Tennessee Vols in baseball up there under Wes Johnson. The Dogs, 3-3 in the league. There's about five teams in the league that are 3-3. Kentucky 5-1, by the way. The team that swept Georgia in the opener turned out to be a pretty good ball club, at least for now. Got to mention Georgia basketball. Kind of remiss that I didn't mention this earlier. Big win for the Bulldogs over Coach Steve Forbes and Wake Forest Demon Deacons, 72-66 in Winston-Salem. And I don't want to hear people tell me that the NIT doesn't count. Okay. And I'm going to tell you why that argument does not hold water. Maybe it doesn't matter to Georgia. Maybe it doesn't matter to North Carolina or Kentucky. But the teams that Georgia has beaten in the NIT, Xavier and Wake Forest, all they got is basketball. They don't got nothing else. It matters. Trust me. You beat Xavier Musketeers, that mattered to Xavier. Xavier was previously 9-0 in first-round NIT games in school history. Wake Forest had only lost one home game all year long. Okay. Forbes was 48-6 in that building over the last 3 years. They went in there without their 7-foot center. Now, yeah, Wake was missing their guard and he was their leading scorer. The Dogs were missing their leading rebounder, Russell Chua. And he didn't play, a 7-foot, 280-pounder. Georgia got outscored 40-12 in the paint. And still won because they shot over 50% from three. They balled out. It was a great win. Even and Mike White is, you know, who's like the most humble, politically correct coach ever. I guess this is as close to trash talking as we're going to get from Mike White. When he says, let's go do the same thing to Ohio State. He says, we're going to Columbus anyway. Might as well compete. That's the closest thing you're going to get to trash talk from Mike White. Let's go do the same thing to Ohio State. They're going to play Ohio State in the quarterfinals of the NIT at 7 p.m. on Tuesday night in Columbus. They're going to be a big underdog. I don't think they're going to win. Just to be honest, Ohio State, I think, is better. But you know what? Georgia's playing really well. I mean, Dylan James is freshman. They might keep this guy. He had a career-high 14, banging three-pointers down in the clutch, raucous, loud, hostile crowd, and this freshman's nailing these shots. It was impressive. It was a really impressive win Sunday afternoon. And it was on ESPN. That's a good win for the brand. Again, it's not the NCAA tournament. Mike White will tell you, look, that's the tournament everybody wants to be in. And yet you recognize the value of extending your season and getting some of these young guys opportunities to play in these environments. I mean, you just beat Wake Forest in Winston-Salem. That is not easy, folks. Okay, I don't care, January, February, March, April, June, July, August. You beat Wake Forest and Steve Forbes in his home gym. And it just doesn't happen often. You beat Xavier and Sean Miller. Okay, good chance that Sean Miller and Steve Forbes will ultimately be in the College Basketball Hall of Fame. Those are two big-name coaches. Those are big-time coaches. Those guys don't get out-coached. I'm just going to tell you. X and O, you can hold your own. They've seen everything under the sun. They've been in primetime games. And Mike White took him down with this Georgia team. Jabri Abdur-Rahim hasn't played in 6 games. It's kind of their captain. He even played. He's been out. And they're winning these games. Silas Demery Jr., Blue Kane, a couple other freshmen you really want to see Georgia keep, your chances go up and the nucleus gets stronger and the momentum happens. So, yeah, I know Georgia fans are still a little snobby and, oh, well, our basketball team didn't make the NIT or the NCAA, blah, blah, blah. I'm not even going to – well, you're cheating yourself because these guys balled out, played really well. The Georgia softball team. People, you know, it's interesting to me. It's been interesting to me. I'm surprised that Georgia softball isn't like a bigger deal at the University of Georgia because the travel ball in Georgia is the best in this side of the Mississippi, better than any state. California travel ball is amazing, okay? But when you talk about states producing D1 softball, Georgia's at the top of the list. And Tony Baldwin's in his third year, and now that he's getting a lot of these Georgia girls that maybe started their career other places to come home and finish. Lily Backus, the latest example, their pitching ace, was at North Carolina. You got Shelby Walters, who was at Duke. A couple of those girls came back. Madison Kerpix, the third. They got a deep enough staff that this Georgia women's softball team could be at the College World Series. They're currently number 5 in the country. They just swept Ole Miss on the road. 5-1 in the league, ranked number 5. Polls come out today. They might move up another spot or two, but this is a veteran team and they can really hit the ball. They're probably the best hitting team in the nation. So that's one to keep an eye on. And obviously Turner Stadium is getting some updates. It's going to be, you know, next year, the aesthetics are really going to be improved. But right now, I think team room and things like that next year, you will see the aesthetic differences. And I want to say Georgia might host the SEC softball tournament, but that's a big TV sport. That sport overtook hockey, NHL hockey in ratings. And I think sometimes it does better in baseball. I want to say it does better in baseball and TV ratings. Faster, quicker game. Georgia really, really good at that. Both, you know, so the Georgia softball team playing very hot right now. Corey Collins, Georgia baseball player, named SEC Player of the Week. Had a heck of a performance against Alabama. He was 647 for the week. Against Alabama, he was 7-for-12, hit 583, and also perfect fielding and 27 chances. So Corey Collins moved to the leadoff spot. We heard Wes talk about that a little bit earlier. Charlie Condon continues to lead the nation in hitting, now number 2 in home runs. I like to say he's the Herschel Walker of Georgia baseball. If you have not seen Charlie Condon play at Georgia and you're a Georgia fan, you're cheating yourself, okay? This is one of those guys you want to say you saw. You want to say you saw him play, right? And Georgia gets some pretty special and elite athletes in different sports. You saw Ant-Man, the number 1 overall basketball player. Hopefully you got to see him play in Stegman Coliseum. He was fantastic. You know, he lived up to his billing. You got to see Brock Bowers, maybe the greatest college football tight end in history, and what he did for the Bulldogs. You heard, you know, me lobbying to get the Brock Bowers statue built, to control the narrative, right? You plant the flag, you tell people, you know, who you want to see recognized. Heck, tell me that. You can put that in the comments. You can write me an email, MikeGriffith032@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at MikeGriffith32 as well. It's going to be an interesting week. I know Brandon Adams has had a lot to talk about on Dog Nation Daily every day, 10 a.m. Catch that here, whether you're watching this on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter stream, on our homepage. Jeff Centel, we mentioned before, the Hedges. Thursday night, Kaylee Manziel, Connor Riley. You know, they have a show on Thursday night, always interesting. And, of course, our daily updates on DogNation.com as Georgia with some Tuesday availability with Kirby Smart. Hopefully some viewing on Thursday, and then we'll see what comes out of the first full scrimmage next Saturday. Didn't really see much of a scrimmage this last weekend, as I understand it, with the coaches' convention in town. Kirby will probably pull the cork and let him loose. So that's what we've got this week. I appreciate you joining me on the Ingles on the Beat show. Look forward to seeing you next Monday night right here on Dog Nation.